As promised, we are joined right now by a senior NBA writer for The Athletic, also a contributor to The Athletic NBA Show podcast. He previously served as the Cavaliers beat writer for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. He is Joe Varden. Joe, great to have you on the program. Joe, how are you?
I'm great, man. It's great to be back.
Good to have you back, Joe. Appreciate it so much. So the Nuggets snatched the Lakers' souls yet again last night. They came back from 20 down in the second half to wreck them. I mean, was that an unbelievable comeback by the Nuggets or a catastrophic meltdown by the Lakers, who just blew another double-digit lead? How do you see that game, Joe?
This reminds me of Game 1 of the 2018 Finals. It was at Oracle in Oakland. The Cavs were huge underdogs and came out in Game 1 just firing. LeBron was unreal. I think he had like 51. And they had him. They had Golden State. And if something was going to happen in the series, it was going to be impacted by that game. But this is the game where JR forgot to score. Nobody called timeout. They didn't take the last shot and went into overtime. They lost. LeBron came into the locker room, punched the wall, broke his hand, kept playing but wasn't the same, and they got swept. And so you think about this, what's going on in between the Nuggets and the Lakers and the history, like 10 in a row or whatever it was, and to have that team down 20, playing the way that everybody was, you know, LeBron, AD were playing, and to lose it like that, it's hard to imagine a team getting off the mat in Game 3 or 4, being down 2-0 the way that they're down 2-0.
No doubt. Joe Varden joining us. So if that's the way it goes, Joe, whenever the series ends, what changes would you anticipate the Lakers making to try to get the most out of LeBron's remaining years?
You know, they have a good track record when it comes to LeBron, you know? Like, they've tried a bunch of stuff. Like, they went and got AD. You know, they've changed coaches a number of times. The Russell Westbrook trade didn't work, but then all the deals that they made last February did work. You know, they got to the conference finals. So, you know, they are going to take a big swing, is what we hear. Like, they're targeting maybe Trae Young or Murray, you know, in Atlanta. Donovan Mitchell here in Cleveland is a name that comes up as a trade target. Whether it happens is another matter. But they want to get that one. They want to take that one more run. You know, they know LeBron's at the end. They know even Anthony Davis is getting older. So you need that dynamic third player. And, you know, again, the Lakers have shown us that they are willing to try this with LeBron on their team.
Joe Varden joining us once again. So, Joe, what about the Knicks? They also stabbed the 76ers in the heart. They go on that 8-0 run in the final 27 seconds in that wild comeback win. Would you make the same argument about Philadelphia that if you're going to lose that game the way they lost that game, granted they haven't lost 10 in a row to the Knicks, but do you see them? Because Joel afterwards said, we're good, and he guaranteed they'd come back and win the series. Can you make any argument for Philadelphia at this point?
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
Especially if Joel is going to look more like he did last night and then play even better, I guess. You know, I mean, they say in the playoffs, it's a cliche. I don't know if I believe it all the time, but they say, you know, the series doesn't really start until somebody picks up a win on the other team's floor. So, you know, the series shifts to Philadelphia. Coming into the tournament, the Sixers were by far the hottest team. Joel was playing well. They were playing well, you know, then he tweaks his knee, a couple things happen. But yeah, like, they are close. And, you know, if Joel is okay, they certainly have a chance to get back in the series. Nick Nurse is awesome. One of the best coaches in the league, I think. You know, I think the gnashing of teeth over the officiating will get the ref's attention. It always does, you know, fair or not. And so I think you'll see a little bit different tone, in Game 3. You know, Jim, it's a fun story too. Last night, I'm in Cleveland for the first round covering the Cavs and Magic. And the Cavs beat the Magic again last night, but they didn't open the doors for the locker room, to let us in. And we were wondering why. And then it dawned on some of us like, oh, they're watching the end of this game. And through the walls, we could hear the Cavs react as a team when DiVincenzo hit that last three. It was unbelievable how loud the reaction. So you can just imagine that all throughout the NBA, just shock over the way that game ended.
Nice job, Joe. I love that. That's a great anecdote. A great anecdote. So I was going to say next that you are in Cleveland and you're covering the Cavaliers and their second straight win over the Magic last night. You know, I really expected more than what I've seen from Orlando thus far. Nothing against Cleveland. But what's been your biggest takeaways from that series so far?
Yeah. So the Cavs really aren't playing well, and they are in total command of the series. And to your point about the Magic, like, you know, I've seen them a couple times throughout the year. I really like their young team. I like the direction. And I knew that they were in the bottom third of the league in offense. But when you get into this series and see them as a group, and the inability to make a three-point shot in today's game, is, I mean, obviously, it's a deal breaker. And I think back to, you know, Franz Wagner, who is one of their most dynamic players, and he carried Germany to the FIBA World Cup. And I bring it up because I covered that, and then I saw him every step of the way. I saw him against the U.S. I saw him beat Serbia in the finals. And he was one of the best players in the tournament. And they need, the Magic need him to do that in this series, and he has been unable really, to shake free from Max Strus. Strus is here from Miami. He brings that Heat culture. He brings that sort of, like, toughness, yeah, don't talk to me about the first round kind of attitude that is lacking on an otherwise young team in Cleveland. And Strus isn't, like, jumping off the stat sheet with his threes or anything like that, but he is locking up Wagner, making it really tough on him. And the Magic just don't have an answer right now. Jared Allen has made Isaac virtually unplayable in the middle. Suggs hurt his knee last night. I thought he was done for months. And, of course, he's so tough he comes out and plays in the second half with the sleeve over his leg. But the Magic are in trouble right now. And, like, you know, obviously there'll be some adjustments, probably some lineup changes. But it's hard to imagine what it could be that would get them back into the series if they're not going to make shots.
You know, it's hard to dispute that. I agree. I thought they would do better. I thought they'd be in a better spot, but you're right. If you're not knocking in three, you've got no shot. And if you're not making shots at all, you really have no shot, obviously. Joe Varden joining us. Hey, Joe, what do you make of Indy and Milwaukee? For instance, Indy won 4 of 5 in the regular season with Milwaukee, and the Bucks were without Giannis. Dame supposedly was so unhappy. A little unusual to see Dame go off the way he did in the first half, given he was so unhappy. But what about the Pacers, man? I mean, what do you make of the way they showed up? And then how different a Pacers squad are you expecting to see tonight?
Well, I mean, obviously, I think for survival purposes, we need to see a much more focused, tougher Pacers team that pays far greater attention to detail. But this is the thing about the playoffs, and if you're around the playoffs a lot, it becomes a cliche. It's almost like second hat. But if you just casually watch, then maybe you don't realize the difference, not in the intensity. Like, yeah, of course, the playoffs are more intense, but it is the attention to detail. One time, Steven Adams was telling me, like, he had just joined the Grizzlies, and he was talking to me about what he can bring to that Grizzlies team that had been to the playoffs before but was so young that it didn't go well. And he's talking about literally it comes down to the inch when you're trying to set a screen or how you get around the screen or how you close out on a three. And those are the things that you just don't know until you've been there. And so when you look at the Pacers and you're wondering how did they get blitzed by this team that they handled all year long, I think more than anything that happened in the regular season, it comes down to a very young group collectively that doesn't have a ton of playoff experience. Like, I know Siakam's there. I know he's been there. He's had deep playoff runs. But outside of Siakam, it's a young group, and Halliburton's very young, and on down the line. And you don't know about how precise you have to be in these pressure situations until you've gone through it. So is one game enough of a reality check for the younger players to catch up? I suppose we'll see. But for all the knocking we do on Doc Rivers, he's got a ton of playoff experience. I know Rick Carlisle does too, but Doc's team is a veteran team with champions. and the Pacers largely are not that.
Hmm. Joe Varden joining us. Joe, before you go, you wrote a really interesting piece, I thought, for The Athletic about how injury concerns could impact Team USA at the Paris Olympics. For instance, if Kawhi Leonard and Joel can't go, how would USA basketball go about filling those roster spots when most NBA players will be on vacation and getting that much coveted, much needed downtime with their families?
That's a great question, Jim, and it is especially so because of how this unfolded. Almost because, you know, if you go back to September and you think about, there was a story that Shams and I did sort of announcing that LeBron and Steph and KD were interested. But right away, you had like six or seven, no doubt, hands down, forget about it, Hall of Famers that said, I want to play for Team USA. To the point where it was like the USA basketball people had to say, okay, this is great, but we need to do something to engage the younger players in the event something happens to these guys who say they want to play, that we can still fill out our roster with the best possible talent. So they put out this pool of 41 players. And so now everybody on that list is a candidate, a known public candidate to be on Team USA. So we get to last week, and the team gets announced, and there's really no surprises on it. Those names had been reported by us and a few others for months. And so the players who were under consideration that had to find out that they're not going to be on Team USA, now not only do they make separate plans, but some of them may have hurt feelings. Now, there certainly is a sense of, like, service to country, you know, playing for USA, like pride, and then the allure of Paris. I get all that. That could trump some of these hard feelings. But I can tell you there are some hard feelings with some of the players on that list that didn't make it. So, you know, the juggling act of replacing a player like Joel, if they have to, or Kawhi, if they have to, is going to be, you know, whose ego is still in check, whose plans are breakable. There are players on that list that didn't make it who are going to get married now this summer. Can they switch that around if they get the call? You know, so There's a number of different ways this could go, including in 2021. We had training camp in Tokyo or in Las Vegas, and Bradley Beal and Kevin Love were on the team. Well, neither of those players were able to break camp and go to Tokyo, and so one player came from the select team. So that's the group of younger NBA guys who come to Vegas to practice against Team USA. That was Keldon Johnson, and then they just called JaVale McGee off the street. You know, he wasn't in a big pool. He wasn't in training camp. They called him and asked him to play. He was in great shape, and he was able to come and play a small role. So, you know, if they have to go that route, Jim, there's definitely a scenario where instead of filling it with another superstar, now they look the role player route. This is the first team, probably since the Dream Team, that does not have a role player. These are 12 superstars on this team.
Hey, Joe, I love JaVale McGee. I'd ask him again. I'd give him a lifetime exemption. I don't even care how old he is. I'd let that guy play at 80. I love JaVale McGee. Joe Varden is a senior NBA writer for The Athletic. He's also a contributor to the Athletic NBA Show podcast. Hey, Joe, it's always great to have you on the show. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Oh, thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me.
We'll do it again soon, Joe. Appreciate it. Joe Varden joining us. Good stuff. Good conversation. And I do love JaVale McGee. Like, I mean that. I'd invite him again. I'd always invite him.